It's 2:06 on Monday afternoon. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. This is Political Rewind. Wow, what a weekend. We have so much news to talk about since Donald Trump issued his executive order, which put a travel ban in place that we'll talk about in much more detail in the next little while. With us, as always, Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read his column on Thursdays and Sundays, and he oversees the Political Insider blog, which is on AJC.com. Jackie Cushman, Republican insider, joins us. We're glad she's back. Farron Johnson, a Democratic strategist, is here. And joining us from her office up at the Capitol, Tamar Hallerman, the Washington correspondent for the AJC. Thank you all so much for being here.
We've all got our green cards. We're ready to go.
Thank God.
We're going to try to take the... we presume... Well, before I even talk about the subjects... This is a show you really need to get involved with. We want to hear what you're thinking. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Yesterday we got a tweet from one of the people who follows us. Sometime late Sunday morning, Jim, it said, "Holy cow, we need an emergency political rewind." This will have to stand in for that. We're going to, because everybody out there who loves politics has been hearing a lot of the national news, you've heard the same sound over and over again, we're going to attack this from the point of view of what's happening in terms of people in Georgia who represent Georgia. And as a starting point, let's listen to Jack Kingston, former U.S. congressman who, of course, lost a bid for a primary bid for Senate. Has gone on to be a big Trump surrogate. And let's start with him. Sean Powers, a producer at On Second Thought, talked to Jack yesterday, and here's what he said.
One of the Paris attackers had a fake Syrian passport. FBI Director Comey has testified before Congress that we really don't have information that's sufficient to vet people properly. And so what the Trump administration's doing is trying to look around the corner and say, okay, what could happen and how can we prevent it?
So there's a positive take on what's been going on. Jim Galloway, how do you describe the uproar that you've watched across the country and here over this past weekend?
Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of the rollout of Obamacare and the website in the fact that it really wasn't all that well coordinated. In fact, it was. I mean, the rollout of the immigration kind of slowdown or suspension. It wasn't vetted well at all. I mean, we're finding out now that the Department of Justice never sent it. Homeland Security never saw it before it happened. The people who actually implement the law had no voice in its composition or could not point out the pitfall. So you had on Saturday, green card holders couldn't get into the U.S., and then Reince Priebus was on Meet the Press and said, yes, they could.
Yes, they'll be able to.
Yeah. Maybe we'll ask them a few extra questions. You've got, I think, now four federal judges that have declared various parts of the order, have suspended enforcement of various parts of the order. It hasn't been overturned in toto, but in the future, we know that there's going to be challenges based on its alleged racial characterization. And over the fact of whether an executive order can actually pick people out by country, which may be contrary to some decade-old law.
To what extent, Jackie and Farron, I throw this to each of you, whoever wants to answer first, is this an issue that relates to the substance of what the Trump administration is doing? And to what extent is it a mishandling of how you vet this through your agencies and then how you communicate it to the public? Whoever wants to go first, go first.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the fascinating thing is if you put aside, I agree with Jim, clearly in terms of a, you know, pristine rollout of whatever the policy is, this was not it. But this, you know, you can say the same of Obamacare, the website. And there's a fascinating article, Jim, you may have already seen this, by Jonathan Bierstein in Bloomberg View talking about Trump is running the White House like a Democrat, that for years Democrats kind of had various people doing various parts of the White House administration, but it was consolidated under Republicans, and Obama consolidated as well, and that made for a smoother running White House. And so possibly because he has many different, even though he has a chief of staff, he also has Kellyanne Conway, he's got several different people doing different things, that maybe as he extends his time in the presidency and rolls that all up into one person, it might become smoother. So that's one part. So that's just the actual implementation. And the second part is things that we've seen other things he's done this past week is, one, he's moved very fast. If you look what he's done in the last week he's been in office, so a little over a week, he's moved very, very fast. And I think many people are stunned by that, probably mostly the press corps, because they actually have to report on all of that, and that makes for a lot of work. And I think secondarily, what you see is he's actually doing what he said he would do. I mean, this is nothing that he did not talk about, both in his national security speech, which he did in August the 13th, in his October 22nd speech in Gettysburg. He talked about what he was going to do as president. He was elected, and he's doing what he said he would do. So I think it's really fascinating for people to say, oh, my gosh, it's so fast and what's happening. But what he's doing is he's talking about national security, that he feels as commander-in-chief, which he is, he's president, that we don't have the right vetting and process for these terror-prone regions, which is how they're referred to, and he wants to make sure that we know that we can vet these people before they're let in.
Theron, obviously a great outcry among many, many people, that this isn't about communication or organization. This is about the substance of what he's done. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's the question that we as Americans have got to ask ourselves is this really the American way? Does this really tear into the fabric of who we are as Americans? Now, I agree with Jim, and I sort of disagree with him a little bit as far as the comparison to Obamacare. Now, Obamacare was an actual act that wanted to go through Congress. People had buy-in. Folks had months and months and months to kind of weigh in on this. This was something that the president talked about doing his campaign. To Jackie's point, I think this was something that we knew Donald Trump was going to do. We didn't know how soon he was going to do it. Yes, he ran on this platform. Many of the radicals on the right voted for him to be president because they wanted him to do just this. But this is where it becomes amateur hour. And this is the point that I want to make. If you're going to go out and put forth an executive order like this, where you have not fully vetted it, where you don't have full comprehensive input from all of the agencies involved, and then your response to these seven terrorist-prone countries, which we saw over the weekend has come out, that has not had a single attack on American soil, but then to blame it on President Obama because, you know, he put these out there, to me, that's where the problem lies. And I think that's why you saw all these folks all over the country saying, wait a minute, okay, if people cannot re-enter this nation or in their states to be with their families, and more importantly, interpreters who are fighting the war on terror for the U.S., who are actually over in Iraq helping American soldiers, I think that's where you saw the outrage. And I think, you know, at a time where we expect President Trump to do what he said he was going to do, but I think it was just really amateur hour and there was really no correlation, there was no communications to really make sure that the executive order actually handled right. People who were trying to come back into the U.S.
Tamara, I want to get you into this conversation because here's what an interesting observation I think a lot of us had. Yesterday, we heard loud voices among Democrats, certainly Georgia Democrats like John Lewis, Hank Johnson. We heard certainly all the protesters out there. We've heard Democrats in the Georgia General Assembly. We're going to hear one of those sound bites in a few minutes. But Republicans up there on the Hill with you, until today, you filed a piece saying they're finally starting to speak out. And is it that they just weren't quite sure what they needed to say, that they were kind of testing the wind?
You've heard all sorts of things coming out of different offices. Some people were saying, we had no idea this was coming. We didn't know the details of this plan, and we didn't feel comfortable commenting. You also have people that want to stay as far away from it as possible. And you have others who are waiting to see what their colleagues were saying. Would they get permission from party leaders to... Hello?
Yeah. We've got you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
you also have certain congressional leaders who have raised questions about it. So I think some were waiting to see if they were kind of allowed to do that.
All right. You've got Johnny Isaacson. You've quoted now. You've tracked him down. He says, thinks it's a good idea, right?
Yeah, he seems to overall. There's this broader idea of kind of tightening regulations on the border.
But he does fault the rollout.
Yes. Yes, and he said part of it was the fact that the people at federal agencies like the Department of Homeland Security really didn't know how to implement it. They weren't given enough advance notice.
And the White House did talk about this to some degree, and I think there is a good point. I don't think it was, you know, thought about all the way through the execution and done flawlessly, but there is the challenge that if you're looking at national security and your goal is to keep out those people that want to do us harm, right? That's the theory behind the national security. And that if you spread it to everybody before you implement it to make sure it implements very cleanly, that you actually give people that want to get into the United States time to get in without being detained. So I do think there is a bit of a, because it's national security and because it's borders and because it's, I think there is a challenge with trying to do that slowly, and I think that there makes a lot of sense to be able to do it rapidly, but it does leave it to be a little very kludgy.
But let us be clear, and Theron kind of brought this out. There is a reason why those seven countries were named when they were named, and that is because politically, in diplomatic political terms, they don't matter that much right now, and they're kind of showpieces.
As opposed to, say, Saudi Arabia, Egypt.
Yeah. Egypt, all those places, they matter a great deal. And if one starts slapping restrictions on their citizens' travels, then it's going to be, then those are going to be reciprocal. Now, what we have here I think one thing we need to watch out for, we're going to see a lot of very quick Democratic reaction here. I mean, that's become the standard operating situation for politics these days. What you have to watch for now is cracks on the Republican side.
And we've been starting to see that over the last day or so, particularly from Bob Corker, who was considered as a VP contender for Donald Trump and also for Secretary of State. He's raised some questions about this policy. So it'll be interesting to see if we have more Trump allies who do raise questions.
Well, it's interesting, Kumar, because Theron, John McCain has been, and Lindsey Graham have both questioned it as well, and President Trump tweeted out some pretty critical comments about them for opposing him on this.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget. I mean, I've said it on this show, and Jackie and I have debated it throughout the whole primary campaign on the Republican side. Donald Trump became the Republican nominee by running against establishment mainstream Republicans. And so what you're seeing now, to Jim's point, when you go out and you do a very hasty, unorganized, clumsy rollout, it is executive order, this gives Republicans an opportunity to really say, hold on, wait a minute, this guy is definitely, you know, not fit to be in this position. The other thing that
I didn't cut you off.
The second thing is that since Jim took it there, these are also countries that Donald Trump pointed out where he has no quote unquote business ties. Now, as a Democrat, yes, I am responsible to come on this show and to really push back. But at the same time, I think what is inexcusable, what we cannot make excuses for this guy, is that he is now the president. He basically, and this is the outrage. What you heard from people at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport yesterday was not so much the executive orders, but these were people who have actually spent years going through the process of obtaining green cards. They have legal visas to be in this country. Many of those folks that were protesting at the airport,
they have homes and cars.
They are American citizens. And so the problem with this president and how he became president is that when we say it's un-American and it's not the American way, in a time where his wife is an immigrant and his mother was an immigrant who went through the legal process to be in this country.
Jackie, you want to jump in quick?
Oh, there are several things. One, I think it's quite sad, honestly, to hear Theron disparage our president, but I'm not surprised.
Oh, Republicans spent four years defending President Obama.
That's just my personal reaction to your comments regarding his fitness for office. Clearly, he was elected to be president of our country, and I would hope that you would give him a little bit of respect. Secondarily, clearly the rollout was, we've all said the rollout was not good. I think we can move on from that. The question is whether or not this makes sense from a national security perspective. Was it rolled out incorrectly? I think we can all agree it was. But does it make sense for areas that are terror-prone regions, that are torn that are torn? Does it make sense to kind of hold up and make sure we're vetting people? I think it does. And so does the president, and that's why he issued the order. I think from what we see around the world is we have to come to grips about, and this to me, which is really kind of the framework, is we have, I think, an America that believes in inclusion and immigrants and all the things that I stand for. Absolutely, I stand for that. I welcome anyone that wants to come to America and enjoy our way of life. Absolutely. But what I don't want to do is let people that want to come in here and destroy our way of life in.
All right, let me do this. One of the concerns that has been expressed, obviously, is there's a great outpouring of support for people, refugees from country, war-torn Syria, who've gone through such terrible times. Last year, 60 Minutes did a piece on some of the obstacles, the barriers that were trying to be put in place to stop Syrian refugees from coming in. One of them being Governor Nathan Deal, who tried for a while to stop Syrian refugees from coming to Georgia. He couldn't do it because he got a ruling from his then Attorney General, Sam Olin, saying it was federal law. One of the people who spoke to 60 Minutes last year about this was the senior pastor of Johnson Ferry Baptist Church, one of the biggest and most powerful churches in the South, Bryant Wright. Let's listen to a very brief clip of what he told 60 Minutes, and then Bryant Wright is with us on phone. But first from 60 Minutes.
The government has decided 10,000 Syrian refugees are coming. That's not our decision. Isn't it better to reach out and love these folks than to give them the cold shoulder? Which approach do you think might cause a Muslim refugee to be more sympathetic to Islamic terrorism? Which approach? To me, it's a no-brainer.
Pastor Wright, thank you so much. We hear those comments from 60 Minutes. We're glad you could join us today. And of course, the first question is, how are you feeling now about this executive order?
Well, it's been very disappointing, Bill. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to that today. Part of that is because Johnson Ferry has been so involved in ministry to Syrian refugees, really going to ministries that are headquartered in Beirut and Amman, Jordan, and we are really partnering with those ministries for years before we had the Syrian refugee families that we have helped and are still helping in the resettling process. So our heart goes out to these folks that are just truly double victims now. They're caught in the crossfire of a civil war, as well as ISIS constantly stirring up fears and terror there. But then the opportunity to come to the United States, often to be reunited with family members that are already here, is really heartbreaking.
Tamar, let me bring you all in. But Tamar, let me throw this out at you, and then Pastor Wright, I'd love for you to comment too. It's interesting that, of course, Donald Trump won the White House with a large percentage of support from evangelicals. And yet, we're starting to see a split in how evangelicals are responding to this executive order. Tamar, are you hearing from, are you seeing that take place up on the Hill? Are you seeing representatives of various churches or Christian organizations especially starting to mobilize a bit up there?
Not yet, but it's very early. And one interesting thing to note is that while, you know, there's some evangelicals on this particular issue who are not fans of Trump's policies, in other policy areas, there's plenty of support. This Friday on Capitol Hill was the annual March for Life, where pro-life demonstrators came and took to the steps of the Supreme Court to protest Roe versus Wade. President Trump dispatched Mike Pence to go talk to the group, and he won plenty of support for that. So I think it really is an issue-by-issue thing. I'm not seeing too many cracks at this point, but who knows? That could change.
Pastor Wright, if I could jump in, and let me just say I'm a big admirer of your work. Right from the heart
this
every
is
day.
This is how Galloway thinks he's getting into heaven, Pastor.
Oh.
But we had President Trump do an interview with David Brody, who's with the Christian Broadcasting Network, Pat Robertson's outfit. And he said that he would be giving preference. He wanted preference to be given to Christian refugees, in the Middle East. Now, how does that sit with someone involved in the refugee effort like yourself?
Well, I cannot speak authoritatively, Bill, about how it has gone, but I have certainly read reports where it does seem like those that have been persecuted have, and not just Christians, because they're all kind of different groups that have been persecuted related to ISIS or been on the caught in the crossfire of the civil war in Syria. So it does seem like, from some of the reports I've read, that they have not had the kind of priority that we would love the United States to have to come to the rescue of these folks. At the same time, we are called as Christians to seek to reach out to any person in need. Our fellow man is our neighbor that we're called to love and reach out to, especially when they're hurting and they're in need. So I understand the concern. I just can't speak with authority as how much of this was occurring. There have been reports, though, that there was some overlooking of those that have been persecuted there, especially in Iraq and in Syria.
Anybody want to jump in on this, Theron?
No, and I think, and Pastor, thank you so much for your comments and all your work in the community. But I think the other thing that I was really trying to make is, and Jackie knows this, listen, I'm the first person to want to give this president a chance. He was elected to be legitimate president. But I think the big issue here is that also if you look at the current laws that we have in place already, and this is what I'm a little disappointed in some of my Democratic congressmen. You know, we have the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965. That was basically passed to make sure that no one who wants to enter this country will be discriminated upon because of their national origin and their religious beliefs. And so when you look at this and what's going on and how he put forth this executive order, and no one is really pointing out that this quote-unquote can be perceived by a lot of legal experts as illegal. And so that's where I think that you're going to see some of the breaks occur, where Republicans who have been in Congress for a very long time are going to say that these are the type of laws that we voted on and put in place and that may or may not be broken by this executive order.
Yeah, Pastor, how big a congregation is Johnson Ferry at this point? 20,000?
We have about 8,500 members.
8,500. What's been the reaction? I mean, to helping Syrian refugees.
Well, let me build on that, Jim, because you ask a great question, and Pastor, because I know we got to cut you loose in a minute. Not only what's their reaction, but how are you talking to them about the potential for mobilizing? I know you're not an outright overtly political church, but I'm wondering what you're telling them about their responsibility to try to change this.
Well, we haven't really gotten to that point. This has all come up so quickly this weekend. What we did in the Sunday services is we prayed for the refugees and prayed very specifically for the Syrian Muslim refugees and the Iranian Christian refugee family. There's one Christian family and nine Muslim families that we're helping to resettle here. So we prayed for them specifically, and we also prayed for President Trump, because we really recognize, as was the case with Governor Deal back when our first Syrian Muslim family came, and we found ourselves in a different position than he was. We understand the government's role is to provide security for the citizens. It's a different role from the church. At the same time, when we feel like the decisions on security are not well thought out, are not really the wisest or the fairest, we certainly as citizens are called to speak out, as was the case when I wrote Governor Deal in regards to what we were doing here at Johnson Ferry and asking him to reconsider. So if this continues on, I'm sure there will be members in our congregation that are writing our short-termer congressman, as well as our two U.S. senators, just asking for them to weigh in a way that leads to reconsideration of this this misguided decision. I understand he's trying to fulfill a campaign promise. I understand he's trying to protect the citizens. There's great fear about Islamic terrorism that I think was exacerbated because the previous generation just didn't seem to want to even use that term, Islamic terrorism, and that was creating a tremendous sense of ill will within a lot of people in the nation on just looking at the reality of what we're dealing with.
Pastor, right.
These people,
go ahead.
Am I speaking too long? I'm sorry.
No, finish your thought.
I'm just going to say these people are so well vetted. It's just nothing like the European situation when people are showing up on your shore. There's always a chance somebody can break through the system that is of ill will for America. But these people are so well vetted in coming here. And you just don't have any record refugees from these nations engaged in Islamic terrorism on American soil.
Right, Pastor
Wright. I don't know of any record on that.
Yeah, we do. We promised you we'd have you here for a few minutes, and we're grateful that you could take the time. We'd love to stay in touch with you in the weeks ahead to see how your congregation moves forward. But thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be with you, and thank you all for covering this. It's something that we need to continue to discuss, and I know there's a lot of concern
okay.
out there.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Tamar, before, I know you've got to move on too, but Democrats on the Hill in the Senate are promising they're going to do everything they can to overturn this executive order. Is there any action on this at all up there right now? And what are their chances of mobilizing to do that?
There are plans underway to try and do something. Now, they don't have the votes on their own to really stop things, but what they can do in the Senate is slow consideration of several of Trump's cabinet nominees, which is something that Republicans obviously want to get on with really quickly. Rex Tillerson is up for a vote today, the pick to run the Department of State. Democrats could, in theory, slow walk every nominee that comes in the hopes of forcing Republican leaders to try and cut them a deal. Whether they do that, I don't think that's particularly likely from Republican leaders, but it'll at least get people talking.
One other quick question off this subject, but since you're going to leave us in a couple minutes, too. We expect, don't we, that Tom Price's nomination is going to come up in Senate Finance for a vote still tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes, sir, tomorrow morning. So we should have movement on that. And then in theory, it could come up for a vote on the full Senate floor any time after that. In theory, Mitch McConnell could get a move on it quickly, but Democrats have shown that they do want to slow walk this one. So it could be next week. It could be the week after. It could be tomorrow. We don't know.
Tamar, thank you so much for joining us. Stay in touch with us. These are exciting times in Washington. I hope we talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's Tamar Hallerman from the Washington Bureau of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Theron Johnson, Jackie Cushman, Jim Galloway, and I are going to keep talking about this and a lot more after we take this quick break.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. Resolved to lose a few pounds this year? How about a few thousand? Donate your old car, truck, or RV. Drop a lot of unwanted weight from your garage and support public radio.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
Break it down.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jackie Cushman is over there laughing, which is nice. We like it when people laugh in here. Theron Johnson is here. Did you want to tell us what you were laughing about?
No, I love the music. The music was awesome.
Oh, I know. I've got such a great team picking music.
Good job.
Theron Johnson, Jackie Cushman, Jim Galloway are with us. Lots of tweets. Robbie Medved tweeted tongue-in-cheek after, Jim, you said this reminded you of the uproar after the Obamacare rollout. He tweets, I, too, remember the thousands of people who protested after they got health care. Zakia Vasquez says Trump is placating base without foresight or thoughtfulness. 8 days, world is on fire. We have a tweeter who goes by Never My Prez. Yep, all those old folks who keep your hands. Oh, yep, all those old folks with keep your hands off my Medicare signs. Hope they kept them this time. They apply. Megan Welch says Obamacare rollout snafus can't be used for ISIS recruiting. So we're getting a lot of people tweeting who believe the president's executive order was wrong. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB if you think he was right. Jackie, I wanted to give you and Theron each a chance to make some final comments about this before we move on.
Oh, yeah. So a couple of things. One's just to get some data. If you look at actually the 2016 Syrian refugees, 99% of them were Muslim and only less than 1% were Christian, when really the Christians make up 10% of Syria. So there is some to his point earlier. There are much fewer percentages coming in that are Christian than of the actual population. And the second thing is there was just a poll put out by Rasmussen that 57% agree with Donald Trump on temporary refugee ban. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, I think clearly you know, when you have a Republican president, a Republican Congress, a Republican Senate, anything that happens is going to be protested by the Democratic side. That's the way politics works. So I don't think we should be surprised by Democrats slow walking anything through the Senate because that's all they can do. I think on the secondary, I think it'll be interesting to see as Trump becomes, you know, a little longer in the White House, if he actually begins to operate more smoothly. So that's one of the things I think we're going to look for, and only time will tell.
Yeah, I think the thing that, and I agree with everything that Jackie just said, but the one thing that I would slightly push back on is that I don't think it's just really Democrats who we saw on the images on TV. I would bet you that there were a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump who actually had no idea that he was going to act as quickly as he did to ban Muslims, you know, temporary ban to ban Muslims for entering the country.
And so I know I don't like to interrupt you, but that your statement is incorrect. He's banning people from seven countries. He's not banning all Muslims. Someone should be very careful of your words.
No, I'm only repeating what you said. I think I made very clearly early that in pointing out why these seven countries, why he should not have just only banned if he was going to ban seven countries because it was the to basically prevent people from coming over and harming us in the homeland. But the bottom line is this, guys. This is just very un-American. I mean, I don't care who the president is. If it was Hillary Clinton who put forth a temporary ban to basically, you know, put, you know, refugees from seven countries coming back into the state, I would get on this show and criticize her, too. I just think that you've got to listen to what's going on in this country. And I think that this guy he may have good intentions, and I want to still give him the benefit of the doubt. But this chaos that we're seeing on our homeland, not over in Europe and other places, right here with hundreds of thousands of people are afraid that they may not be let back in this country because they've gone through the legal process is a big deal.
And let me say, polls aside, whether this is called a ban on Muslims or not by people here, that doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. What matters is how it's perceived out in the rest of the world, and how it's perceived out in the rest. They're not going to be persuaded by saying, "Oh, we're just banning countries." This is going to be seen as a ban. One person that I have not seen jump into this conversation that I really truly want to hear from is Jim Mattis. He runs the Pentagon now. He's the Secretary of Defense. And we get back to that point that John McCain made, was that you've got Iraqi translators on the ground who are risking their lives, risking their families' lives in order to help the U.S. If they are going to be shown the door, then that really impacts on our operations there. And again, it's going to be what the world thinks of this and not really what America thinks that's going to have the first and deepest impact, I think.
So I heard two things that I think were really fascinating. One, what I heard, which may not have been what you meant to say, Jim, but what I heard in my ears was the truth doesn't matter because we're only banning from seven states that are actually terror-prone refugee. What matters is perception. So I think that's fascinating coming from a reporter, just as an aside, regardless of whether literally what you said. You said it doesn't matter that it's only seven countries. It matters what the world thinks. And I think part of what the world thinks is how we report things. So I think it's very careful to be very clear about what we're doing. I think secondarily, to talk about trying to keep our country safe as an American, I think is fascinating as well, because I do think we have this very strong conversation going on as a country on what does it mean to be American, and does America mean citizens come first? And we haven't really gotten to that discussion yet today, and I think we will later.
But Jackie, listen, no one on this show is for people entering this country with the intent to harm Americans, okay? Let's not Republican or Democratic spin this, okay? I just said that I want to give this president a chance. So to push back on, I can't speak for Jim. He's his own man. He can respond to himself. But to say that I don't have the right as an American to have a right to vote and everything, to not criticize this move as a very un-American move, I think it's just irresponsible on your part. Because let me just tell you, there is no way that you can say that these seven countries who have not for the last 15 years, 10 or 15 years, can legitimately say that they have actually harmed or killed someone in this country because they were allowed to come over here as a refugee from these seven countries. The data doesn't back that up.
These are countries that are currently undergoing either jihadists or they're involved in terror. I mean, this is where it's running rampant.
So let me throw out a question to you as long as we're continuing this conversation, which I think is a good thing. And we got a tweet from Ashley Stringer who raises a question that I would pose. She says, some of you keep talking about how we need vetting for refugees like they don't already go through a two-year process. So, Jim, is the system truly broken, or is it that the Trump administration needs to fulfill a campaign promise based on their perception that the system is broken?
I think the Trump administration needs to get in there and get its hands on what's happening and try to figure it and take ownership of it. I don't think that's happened yet. And part of the reason is because the operation that handles the visas is Rex Tillerson isn't there. They don't have control of the bureaucracy right now. The bureaucracy is simply in a temporary management position right here. And so you don't have a whole lot of trust, I don't think, going on between the White House and Foggy Bottom. In fact, I think that you're going to see a lot of distrust happen between there.
Well, I want to weigh in real quickly on that, as a matter of fact. Sean Spicer has been conducting the daily press briefing at the White House as we've gone on the air. And our crack team has been monitoring it, and it's now over, Jenny Ammon tells me. But there was a move today, earlier today, a number of career diplomats, speaking of Foggy Bottom, around the world, signed a statement saying that they or started talking about making a formal protest over the travel ban. And Sean Spicer was asked about that, whether it was going to happen or not. Spicer said that if career diplomats don't like the immigration move, quote, they should either get with the program or go.
And I think Jim has a really good point earlier. This is clearly Trump making good on a campaign promise. I think we can all agree on that. He said he would do it when he was running for president. He became president. He's actually doing what he said he would do, which is very shocking to many people. And I do think that clearly, because it's been a very short time, they don't have a full understanding of what currently is being done, hence the gap.
Were these U.S. diplomats?
Yes. These are career American diplomats in locations around the world.
So I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a conflict between someone who is so determined to fulfill his campaign promises, which is what President Trump is, and a bureaucracy who is so used to maintaining power even as presidents change, that you're going to be interested to see what actually happens. I don't think we know yet.
At the very top of the show, I wanted to play Jack Kingston's comments because he represents the way the Trump administration feels about it. So you heard him at the beginning. Theron, yesterday we heard from Senator Vincent Ford, candidate for mayor, saying that he wants Atlanta to become, to the extent there's such a thing as an official sanctuary city, he wants it to call itself a sanctuary city. But the man who you've spent a lot of time advising, working with, Kasim Reed, the current mayor of Atlanta, had this to say about this whole situation yesterday.
We believe in the work, and the work is making sure that 11 people weren't detained and in limbo. And that didn't occur in the city of Atlanta last night, and everybody was processed through and is now in the United States. I would challenge anyone to identify a city in the southeastern region of the United States of America that has done more to be welcoming to immigrants and refugees than the city of Atlanta. How are we arguing about sanctuary cities versus welcoming city when there is a president that is talking about banning people from 7 countries? And you can call it whatever you want, but it's a Muslim ban.
All right, that was Mayor Kasim Reed.
Yeah. And what we've got is we've got a small kerfuffle over a little bit of semantics here. What happened was when in reaction last Thursday, in reaction to the first round of executive orders that affected immigration, you had Reid put out a statement condemning them, calling them unconstitutional, but he kept using the phrase, "We are a welcoming city." Didn't ever use the word sanctuary. I would point out that the city is MARTA is currently looking for federal assistance to build a huge rail line out the Clifton corridor. I would also remind you that the legislature is in session and raised nails attract the attention of hammers, and there are plenty of them in the Capitol. So I think in the end, this is and the other part of this is, this is basically about immigrants in detention whose status has been questioned. Okay, I don't think Atlanta, the city jail, keeps that many people. That's pretty much a county operation right there. So I'm not sure exactly how much the city of Atlanta proper has to do with this issue.
I think the thing that Mayor Reed really cleared up is, let's not miss the moment here where what happened at our airport, which is the world's busiest airport. I mean, we saw what happened in New York at JFK. And these 11 people, people who are here in America legally, were detained. And because he was there and a lot of other people, I know Congressman Hank Johnson went out there, Congressman John Lewis were there. The one thing we got to point out is that these people were going, they went through the process. But what you saw, Jim and Jackie, is that you saw the federal government and the city government and the TSA and the airport, Homeland Security, all these different agencies working together to make sure these folks got home safely. Now, I will tell you, this whole conversation about a welcoming city versus a sanctuary city, and what Senator Ford, who's clearly got some very political...
He is running for mayor.
He's got some very political ambition. I think it was a little too soon for him to go out and to challenge this mayor at a time. We may remember when Mayor Reed and Governor Deal last year, one of the things that they sort of were on different sides of was this conversation about refugees and about becoming a welcoming city and a sanctuary city.
All right.
So,
I you want to finish? All right.
So I just think that the mayor should be complimented, but I think that also Senator Ford has the right to raise this question. I think that discussion will continue.
Thank you. We got to get to another break, but as we do, Jim, you mentioned you'd like to hear what our new defense chief, General Mattis, says. Actually, we got a tweet from Leslie Small, who says, I think General Mattis has spoken, and she has a link to a piece in the Washington Examiner that I had missed. Mattis apparently has now sent to the White House a list of Iraqis who have worked on behalf of the U.S. military and the American government, said, please, essentially, these are people who we need to give sanctuary to. So that's good. Thank you, Leslie Small, for that. All right, let's get a break in, our final break of the show. We got so much more to talk about that maybe we'll just keep talking for hours. This is Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, a doctor's perspective on how medicine has changed the end of life.
Doing things has become very easy. Ordering a CT scan, ordering some treatment, but knowing when to stop is so much harder.
We talk with Dr. Haider Vareich. His new book is called Modern Death. Join us.
Fresh Air, this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Back on Political Rewind, it's 2:48 on Monday afternoon. Before we continue our conversation, let me remind you that we are going to do a citizens panel in probably mid-February. And we've been asking you to tell us why you should be on that panel. Jenny Ament, who's been, and Lisa Clark, our producers who've both been keeping track of the calls, are telling us, you know, during the campaign, a lot of you who were conservative Republicans contacted us. And in fact, we had a number of you on the panels, and we loved that. Apparently, we're Democratic heavy right now. So call this number, 678-757-4472. Leave a message, and we will get back to you. As I always say, make it succinct, because the longer we have to listen, the more bored we get, and the chances are not good you're going to get on the panel. 678-757-4472. Jim Galloway, Jackie Cushman, Theron Johnson are with us. Let's talk about William Pryor for a minute. Donald Trump now tells us in a tweet that tomorrow night he is going to name his Supreme Court Justice nominee. And, of course, there's lots of thinking that perhaps he's doing it to divert attention. He was going to do it Thursday. He's moved it up. So Jackie wants to jump in right away.
I think, what do you think, Jim? I think it's a way to pull the news forward and to control the news flow. But you probably
I don't disagree with this, but I will tell you what. I think this is the moment when we're going to truly find out how Democrats intend to respond to 4 years of Donald Trump. Their reaction to this nominee, if they choose to filibuster it, if they force McConnell, try to put the onus on McConnell to dump the filibuster entirely, well, that'll be one thing. If the Senate resists and decides to keep the filibuster, then we could have some very interesting bargaining that's going to go on, I think. Because I think the way that Merrick Garland was treated last year, when he was nominated in April, May,
mm-hmm. yep.
I think that still rankles on the Senate Democratic side. I think the Senate Democrats felt they were robbed of one of their nominees, and I think they intend to force Trump to dump one of his.
President Trump has suggested to Senate Republicans they ought to look at the filibuster rule, but Mitch McConnell has said, no. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really want to go after that right now because it can come back and bite us in the proverbial behind when there's a Democratic-controlled Senate. But Bill Pryor, an Atlanta Court of Appeals, federal court of appeals judge, very high, we think, on the Trump list, except your colleague, Bill Rankin, at the AJC, wrote a piece over the weekend that suggests one case in Georgia could hurt his chances, particularly with conservatives out there.
And you're going to have to expound on that one, because I have got to say that I missed that story.
All right. So Pryor wrote the ruling on a case of an employee at the state capitol who announced that he was going to go through a sex change.
Okay, that case. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, I understand that.
And Pryor wrote the opinion, the employee was fired. And
right.
Pryor
mm-hmm.
wrote the opinion overturning mm-hmm. the firing, saying you can't do that. It's discrimination. And now there's some really conservative organizations out there that are after Pryor about this. Anybody want to comment?
Well, look, I can see it's actually that's one of the we're still fighting over it at the state capitol. You still have Republicans, prominent Republican lawmakers who are pushing a legislation to prohibit the state from discriminating in hiring on the basis of sexual preference or sexual orientation.
Pryor wrote
because of that ruling.
That's right. And Pryor wrote, an individual cannot be punished because mm-hmm. of his or her perceived gender nonconformity. Because these protections are afforded to everyone, they cannot be denied to a transgender mm-hmm. individual. You know, so Theron, here's my question. Appeals court judge who can write a ruling like that, we all know how surprising Supreme Court justices can turn out. We think we're putting one kind of person on the bench and they go a different direction. Pryor sounds like it'll be interesting to see whether he's as conservative as the Trump folks seem and the Heritage Foundation seem to think he is.
Yeah, in that case, now that you refreshed all of our memories, I mean, that was a big deal here in our state, and it's particularly at state government. But let's not fool ourselves, all right? This Supreme Court nominee selection by President Trump is going to be all about, I believe, will this person, male or female, vote to basically overturn or outlaw Roe versus Wade. I mean, and so while this is important, and he is to be commended for that one singular decision, I think that the Trump administration is weighing heavily, because if you look at what Kellyanne Conway did all weekend, mm-hmm. you look at all of her people, the Right to Life March, it's all about will this person, he or she, will this Supreme Court justice vote to outlaw, or ban, or overturn Roe versus Wade?
And it's only one of four that he may get just right. in the initial 4 years.
So again, go back and look at what Trump campaigned about and what he talked about during the campaign, and he talked about appointing a very conservative judge. I think the point earlier that Jim made and Bill made, that regardless of who's appointed or who he puts up, the Senate has its process in front of it. It'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. But, you know, the reality is the Senate gets to operate like the Senate does, which currently means they get to slow things down and they get to filibuster and they get to do all kinds of interesting things. And that's part of politics. That's why it makes it kind of fun to watch sometimes.
Well, we'll see. He's going to announce it tomorrow night, and it certainly will distract the news media from talking quite as much about the travel ban that he put in place. Jim, let's turn to an issue. Well, not an issue, but a big story to a lot of us who have spent time down at the state capitol broke this morning. Senator Josh McCoon, probably arguably the single biggest lightning rod in the state Senate. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
the most inconvenient fellow in the state capitol, I would say.
Columbus State Senator announced this morning he is not going to seek re-election in 2018. I suggested it was because he's looking at running for statewide office. You say that might not be what it is.
Well, it may or it may not be. He said he is not running for re-election to that Senate seat, to District 29, I believe. That's Columbus, Muskogee County. And he could be a candidate for Attorney General, running against the current incumbent, Chris Carr.
Just appointed.
Mm-hmm. He might, there are other offices. Josh McCune comes from the kind of the Tea Party religious liberty side of things. He has been a very, very big supporter of religious liberty legislation. He has said things about very large companies, Atlanta-based companies, that have not been well received. He has picked fights over ethics and such with the House Speaker and his team. Right now, the situation is if Josh McCune's name is on a bill, that bill dies in the House.
But just hearing Jim go through all of these things that Senator McCune has done in his career, which will soon come to an end as a state senator, to me, this announcement, to me, as it's really going to really, I think, determine how dangerous or how bold or how conservative he'll be going forward. Because now, with all those things that he was doing as a person who has sought re-election each time, now he's announced that he's not running anymore. I don't know what to expect from him from this point on.
Jackie, he said something in his statement that I thought you, as the daughter of a controversial former Speaker of the House, he said, taking on tough issues such as ethics reform, immigration reform, religious liberty, has made my time here worthwhile, but it's come at a cost. As someone that came here to fight for the citizens I represent, not special interests, I have accumulated many, many enemies. As Winston Churchill once said, you have enemies? Good. That means you've stood up for something sometime in your life. Well, Josh McCune has certainly made enemies.
Well, he certainly has, and it came, you can see that happening as he was stripped from his chairmanship this year. I think he's, looking around and figuring this is really hard work. This is not a full-time job. It's a few-month job, and he still has his own job at home. And at some point, you have to figure out, is this what you really want to do, and is it worth the fight? And maybe at this point, he's decided to take a breather, look around, and decide what he's going to do going forward.
The other thing I would just point out is that often people who resign to spend more time with their families are actually doing just that. He just got married in August.
Well, we wish him well, whatever he decides to do next. Look, we're out of time for today's show. Theron Johnson, Jackie Cushman, Jim Galloway, thank you for a really lively and interesting conversation. It was great to have Senior Pastor Bryant Wright and Tamar Hallerman on as well. We'll be back Wednesday at 2. In the meantime, tonight on Lawmakers, the Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court, who I guess makes his State of the Judiciary speech. Did he do it today, or is he doing it tomorrow?
I think he did it today.
All right. Well, that's Harris Hines. He'll be on the show along with you, Jim Galloway, Representative Jesse Petraea, and Representative Scott Holcomb. That's at 7 o'clock on Georgia Public Broadcasting. Remember, if you can't listen to Political Rewind when we're on the air, you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, or you can go to our website where we archive all of our shows. Thank you to Tyler Morris, Lisa Clark, Jenny Amet, Megan Moore, our intern. I'm Bill Nygut. See you again Wednesday at 2:00.